There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It's been said that adolescence is the most technicolor time of our lives, with all the highs and the lows that come with it. It's when adulthood is new and we care most about it. But it's being the most rapid state of human development, adolescence brings with it so many questions. But first, I want to ask our panel today what they remember from their own adolescent transformations, the surprises, the most awkward moments that they remember, and how they got through it. And please share your experiences too. And how would you do it differently now with your own kids? I want to welcome into the studio today Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant pediatrician based at MediClinic, Dubai Mall and Arabian Ranches. Hello and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you. We've got with us Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Adam Griffin, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rock Support Center and a regular on Dubai Today. Welcome
Hi.
Back.
It's great to be back.
Good to see you. And of course, last but not least, Cindy Vandercreek Freens, development coach at Valiant Clinic. Hello and welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. It is just probably the most awkward time that any of us have been through. It's something that everybody has to go through. Nobody is safe away from it. But I want to ask you, Adam, do you remember anything about that time and how difficult it can be?
Yeah, I think I've done quite a few years of trying not to remember, of trying to suppress all this. But it's funny because you just told me you were going to ask me that question a few moments ago, and it instantly was back there. It took 2 seconds, and I felt exactly like it felt to be a teenager again, and how awkward and uncomfortable. I was a very awkward, uncomfortable, quiet, dressed all in black, had very long hair, very moody fellow.
I can't imagine that now.
I know, and it's even to the extent when I meet people I knew from my teenage years, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is how you remember me. If you had a time machine and could go back, I would just tell myself, don't be so concerned about what other people think. Because I was, as a teenager, you're crushingly concerned about what everyone thinks about everything you do. And that feeling of kind of discomfort in your own skin is one of my overriding memories from that time.
Oh, completely. You just feel like everybody's watching you, can notice every zit that arrives on your face that morning. Completely. Dr. Shola, for you, any memories that stand out?
Well, for me, what stands out is this zit problem.
Yeah.
Because I used to have acne, and I remember there was a particular time. It was during school holidays, and for whatever reason, the acne just decided it was party time on my face. And I felt so strongly about it that to me it would have been better not to go to school, because I felt that's all everyone could see. It was acne, not Shola anymore. So now I have kids, and when I have patients that have acne, I totally get it. The parents think, oh, it's no big deal, but I know it can be a big deal. But hindsight, looking back, it was just a period. It was a phase. And really, it happens to everyone.
And everyone's actually
everyone's
so concerned.
Everyone's got it. Yeah.
So concerned with their own insecurities that actually they're really
That's
not
That's the least
at
of their worries, precisely.
Completely.
So, yeah.
Dr. Kenneth.
I was always a small boy growing up, probably smallest in the class. So I was looking forward to the adolescent growth spurt, thinking that I was going to shoot up to be 6 foot. Well, guess what? I'm 5'6". So it didn't happen.
You're not quite short, but it wasn't what you were expecting.
It wasn't what I was expecting. Yeah. I would go to bed every night and think, tomorrow I'm going to be taller. I'm going to be taller. And I would wake up and actually would measure myself every morning. I put a little pen mark, and every morning I'd get up and it would be the same number. And my growth spurt, it came, but only 2 or 3 inches, not like my peers. So, but that's life. That's the cards I was dealt. And
completely. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that actually you look back now and you think, well, that's not what really matters.
Exactly.
But at the time you think,
oh, I want exactly. I didn't want to be the smallest.
Yeah. Oh, we've all got the insecurities. Cindy, for you.
Oh, there are so many. Let me pick. I think the most important memory is the fact that I was so serious. I wanted to do really, really well, because all the decisions that I would make towards my future would definitely decide who I was going to be. So I paid a lot of attention in class. I wanted to make sure that I would fit in with the rest of the group. And if I had a sit, just like Dr. Shola, I definitely didn't want to go out. Definitely not. I would stay in and would have an extra excuse to not to go.
It's a really common one, isn't it?
Yes.
The skin issues that you can have as an adolescent. There are just so many questions, so many issues and things. You know, we did all go through it, but as parents, I think we forget how difficult it was. But our guests here today, if you've got a question for them, you can send that in on 4001 on the Dubai Eye app, or you can give us a call in studio. But I definitely remember, you know, going to class one day and then realizing that period has arrived. It's an unfortunate thing, but it's something that all girls go through. And if you're not prepared for it, you're in that moment, you've got to hide it. Something that we'll be talking about later on with regards to that is an incredible study that was done recently, which says that girls would rather be bullied than speak to their parents about periods. That blew me away. I'm just thinking, wow, you know, it's become such an issue and we want to hide it. And some kids really look forward to the changes and some others are like, please, I don't want to see changes. I don't want to talk about it. So, you know, we'll talk about all of the different ways that we can help as parents. We do have a full panel with us here in the studio, Dr. Kenneth Dugan, Dr. Shola Fanaran, Adam Griffin, and Cindy Vandercreen Friends. They are all here to tackle all of the different aspects, because it's not just about the bodily changes. It is about the psychological changes as well that happen, how we see the world, how we think about the world, how we think about ourselves. And what we can do about it. It is Eye on Health on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Dubai Today.
Talking about the difficulties, that crazy time of our lives called adolescence, and how to get through it, the weird and awkward moments, the developments that we are not expecting, or the lack thereof as well. If you've got any questions for our panel, we've got with us Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant, pediatrician based at MediClinic, Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center, Adam Griffin, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rocks Support Center, and Cindy Vandercreen Friends, development coach at Valiant Clinic. They are all here to answer your questions. Now, adolescence, okay, the thing that stands out the most is, of course, physical developments that happen. We grow taller, things start coming out of places that you were not expecting them to come out of those places. Let's go through that, because it's important to say that, you know, while your child is going to be changing physically, the mental changes are not keeping up with that at the same time. So the maturity is still not there. In terms of physical changes, Adam, I mean, what are the things that that kids should be looking out for these days? And I guess to the whole panel, it's getting earlier and earlier now that these changes are taking place, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that parents need to be super aware of, because the most common thing I hear is, oh, there's so much time left yet. And when you look at your own child, you see just that. You see a child. Even as they get older, they're always going to still be your little baby. Saying that as a father of two little girls, I can't imagine my little daughter is going through their teenage years. I'm trying desperately hard not to imagine it, in fact. But when they get to, even for girls, as young as 8 years old, and it used to be much, much later, but it's becoming earlier and earlier, as much as like 2 years, what people might expect between, say, 10 and 14, now it can be as young as 8 or even 7 to have these conversations and just to prime kids to what to expect and make them understand these aren't bad things. It's okay to be curious about these. It's okay to use the proper terminology. And so they're not blindsided when it happens. To be honest, they will be anyway. It's called the time of storm and strife for a reason, because it's not a smooth road. That's when these things happen, like we're talking about your growth and your development, that's not a straight line. If your mustache comes in as a boy, you don't go to bed and wake up looking like Tom Selleck. It's not the best mustache in the world. Your arms and legs get longer, you look kind of goofy and awkward, but that's all part of the fun, and that's all in having someone you can speak to and open up to and discuss these things with is so vital for that young person's emotional well-being.
Dr. Kenneth, in terms of, talking about it, particularly for boys, because, I mean, you know, we talk about girls' development a lot, and it is, I guess, girls are more likely to talk about these things with their peers and with their parents. But in terms of boys, do they need to be opening up more? Do there need to be more kind of pathways and relationships for them to be open about what's going on with themselves and how to deal with it?
Well, of course. You know, just like girls can... See, girls have an advantage. It's easy to see when they're going into puberty because the first thing that happens is their breasts start to develop. In boys, the first thing that happens is the testicles get larger. But who examines a kid's testicles, you know? They don't examine themselves. The parents don't look there. A girl's breast development, it's easy to see, you know. So you know the girl's going into puberty, just much easier than a boy going into puberty. Mm. In boys, often the first time the parents will think maybe they're going into puberty is when they see pubic hair. But actually, prior to that, it's the testicular enlargement, maybe 6 months prior to that, that they're going into puberty. So the parents are wondering, why is my kid moody? Why is he sleeping a lot? Well, they're actually going through puberty, but they're a boy,
it's
but
hidden.
You can't see it. It's hidden.
Exactly.
Actually, the comparison with testicular enlargement in females is their ovaries are starting to develop, but the ovaries are inside their body, so they can't be examined. So the second thing that girls develop is breasts, and you can see them. So boys have the disadvantage that the puberty is actually missed often, at least entry to puberty.
And on that note as well, a point in that, because it's obvious with girls, and then they have the menarche and they have periods as well, it's a conversation you can't get away from. It has to be had. Whereas with boys, families can put off this conversation and almost assume, oh, he's old enough, he's probably heard it elsewhere. I would say don't assume anything, really. So don't avoid those awkward conversations. They may be awkward slightly, but it's much better having those awkward conversations than not.
Mm. Dr. Scholler, in terms of having that awkward conversation, the birds and the bees, the development, I mean... Okay, so the thing is, in year six or year seven, they start to talk about these things in science, reproductive science. So as a parent, you kind of might think, oh, it's all right, it's getting taken care of, they're talking about it there, it's fine, I don't need to do it, I don't need to approach it, I don't need to put myself through the embarrassment, because it's an embarrassment not just for the child, but for the parent as well. Is that enough? Or should we be having conversations?
You really need to create an atmosphere where your child feels comfortable to approach you to talk about anything. Because even though these conversations are had in school, and I can assure you it's had in the locker room as well with the boys, a lot of it is misinformation. It's a lot of assumption. And if your child is confused and does not understand, if you turn it or you feel awkward about that discussion, they don't have anybody else to talk to about it. So the first thing is, as parents, you need to get over yourself. And you need to really think about your child rather than the awkwardness you felt when you were growing up. And try not to extrapolate your feelings on your child, because it doesn't have to be that way. And if you start the conversation as a normal conversation, you can start with a book, with animals, anything, storybooks, cartoons, and open up the dialogue, then it doesn't become, let's sit down and have that talk. Because all you're going to get is giggles. Oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. If you start making it something you need to sit a conference for, make it natural, because it's a natural thing.
Have that conversation.
I agree with Dr. Scholler exactly. I just remember when my father decided he was going to talk about puberty, it was a dreaded day. My mother had mentioned in the morning, okay, today your father's going to take you downstairs into the basement.
Oh, gosh.
And I had a brother that was only 18 months younger than me, so we both went together. And we were sweating. My father basically said, just tell your mother we talked about it. And we all ran upstairs, and my mother was happy, but we didn't talk about anything. He didn't want to talk about it. And I learned most of my information from peers.
Yes. And that is what happens. That is what happens with young people. So when we come back in just a moment, I want to ask you as well, how young should we be starting to have those conversations? Because it might be a good thing. It might be a bad thing to do it at different ages. There is an age where it is too young and it can have a bad influence on their peers around them as well. It is Eye on Health with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is Dubai Today.
It is a two-hour special on Eye on Health, talking adolescence. Clinton has texted in saying, well done for having this discussion, team. It is awkward and usually avoided, but necessary for good mental health, mental and physical development of children. He says, my mum asked when my father would have the talk, and he responded that as we lived on a farm, if I didn't know by now that I would never know. He was right. I had figured it out. So those kind of texts are coming in. People are flashing back to how they went through it as well. We do have another question that we will get to in just a moment from another listener. But I want to get to how young is too young to have that talk. Dr. Scholler, you were saying earlier that there is a stage where it can be too young, but where should we be starting as parents?
Well, again, it depends on the environment and where you live. And again, it depends on your family history and when puberty started for the parents, because it usually gives you an inkling on when puberty will start for your child.
So it's hereditary. There is aspects.
A hereditary trait to it, yes. Mm. And generally, as far as I'm concerned, at particular ages, there's some things you can talk about. So even in the toddlers, you can talk about mom and dad and things like that and make it age appropriate. As they get older, you'll also watch how the child is asking questions and what they're interested in. Because what you want to do really is create that opportunity for you to be able to then go on to the harder discussions. And sometimes they'll just pull up, you know, one of those questions out of the heart. You know, I've had the where do babies come from my child when they were about four. And well, it's a natural thing, and you just have to use the age appropriate words to say it, and that's it. You're not giggling about it. You don't show you're embarrassed, even though you're thinking, oh my God, why now? At least it was in the car, not at a dinner table.
Yeah.
So you do have to be ready to respond to them, because as soon as you start suggesting or giving the body language that this is not something to be spoken about, the child picks up on that, and that closes the door. And when you think you're eventually ready, they won't be ready for you. Mm. And it causes more problems.
And Cindy?
Yes, and I think sometimes we get caught up in surprise by what kids ask us. So sometimes it's also good to just say, let me get back to you on that, you know?
There's
no shame in that.
Because, yeah, they may catch you by surprise. Because sometimes as parents as well, we kind of think, okay, it was a great point that you made earlier to get over yourself. But what do you actually say, Adam? Where should we be starting as parents?
Yeah, well, I'm going through this right now. I had my lovely neighbors out there. The lady is expecting. She has a bump and it's kind of showing. So my 4-year-old daughter asked, oh, there's a baby in there. And how did the baby get in there? But one of the great things you can do to buy yourself time is you ask the child and says, what do you think happened? So Abigail said, well, you eat too much food, you get a big belly. She ate too much food. That's why there's a baby in there. So then you talk about it. But again, use an age-appropriate language, like you say. Mm. But the only thing I would say is, you mentioned how it's important to, when your child asks you a question, to respond to them. I'd say the only thing you wouldn't want to do is not have a response. You can speak in whatever age-appropriate language. There's really hilarious discussions of what words to use for certain things within families, and there's a whole range of these. But even I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, but they already are curious, and they know that daddy's different from them, and they kind of talk about their own bodies and things. I think that you don't want to bring shame into it that young age. It sounds weird, but it is true. It's normalized, and this is okay, and you get to know your bodies. The expression you use is name, claim, and explain. And that's a lovely thing to do at this age. And you can carry it straight through.
Expand on that, the name, claim, and explain.
Yeah, so naming your body. Some people advocate using the proper anatomical words for things. Do you want to say, as an Irish man, I still kind of, I still feel funny about that, but I still do as much as possible. But make sure they know exactly what they're talking. They get answers to their questions, and it doesn't crush their curiosity, because that's one thing you can do. If they ask questions, you go, oh, they're like, oh, we don't talk about that. And then it sort of stays there, and you can, even from the toddler years, you're beginning a dialogue that's going to continue for years. And depending on what way you negotiate that will depend on which way that dialogue goes. The only thing I want to pull back to actually was something you said at the beginning, was about, I took umbrage with one word. And that's when you have that talk, and it's that part. That I don't want it to be that talk. No capital T in that. No capital T in talk. It's a conversation, a dialogue that evolves through the child's life.
And this is exactly what you were saying, Dr. Scholler.
Absolutely. And another thing, though, that I encourage parents to do, there are lots of resources and books out there that you can have a look at yourself to give you suggestions and ideas. Because the way I talk about it with my family or the way I approach it with my patients is totally different. Because I go all clinical and that's it. It's anatomy. That's fine. Mm. And I don't have qualms about it. But some parents don't feel comfortable with that. And there are lots of books. We use a lot of social stories for our kids with autism and developmental delay as well.
Interestingly, I mean, this has come up very recently, a study by Bodyform, which was shared with HuffPost UK, revealed that 52% of 1,000 girls surveyed would rather get bullied at school than discuss periods with their parents. And on top of that, 43% believe that periods are an off-limits topic for discussion, and 87% said that they have gone to great lengths to hide their periods. Historically, women's health and women's issues have been hidden and traditionally not spoken about. But that just, those kind of figures astound me. I just think, I mean, you've got a very interesting experience from when you were going through adolescence, Cindy. You had a totally different experience, complete opposite.
True. I was actually very late with my period, and I was actually wanting to have my period, and I was asking my questions, when is it coming? Mm. You know, everybody has it, and everybody complains that they can't go swimming because of it, and I can still go, so everybody knows that I'm not having my period yet. And when it came to that day, they actually celebrated it with me.
In your family, within
in
your
my family,
which
yes.
is a very different approach to what we know and hear about in most families. I mean,
true.
You know, in a lot of families, it's just not talked about at all. And sometimes, if you're lucky at school, you might, get the girls in year six who are about 10, 11 years of age. They get sat down to have that talk. You know, they talk. But, you know, and this is going to happen to your body, and this is how it's going to change, and then you're going to bleed and all of that stuff. We don't need to go into the details, but you do get that talk, but it's not quite the same, and it's not quite enough, is it?
That's very true. Because even with the conversation, the day it happens, it's still a bit daunting. Mm. And I remember as a young teenager as well, going into the supermarket to get the accessories I need. Oh my goodness. It was such a big deal. I had to check who was at the counter. Was it a male? Was it a female? If it was a guy, forget it. I'm not going to pay for that there. Or I'd get my mom or somebody else to buy it for me. Now, it's not a big deal, it's natural, but everybody has that feeling. And in particular for our teenagers now, with the advent of social media and kids being kids, everybody's into everybody's business.
Because social media has really just changed everything, has it not?
Absolutely.
Dr. Kenneth, do you see this as something that has just really changed the experience of childhood in terms of social media and how that comes up?
Well, of course. I mean, puberty wasn't talked about, and now, you know, it's, you know, people are on Instagram and they're seeing things. But, you know, getting back to calling body parts, I just wanted to say, I start from about 3-4 years of age when I examine children, boys and girls. I say, now it's time to examine your penis. And I just say it as if it's just a normal word. Sometimes the kids will giggle. Actually, the kids don't giggle. The parents sometimes shudder. It's like, how did he just say that? But I feel it's really important to call it what it is, like you said, the anatomical word for the thing.
And just be mature
and
about
just,
it.
And just make it matter of fact. Like, okay, here's your penis and here are your two testicles. And for the girls, oh, I see you don't have any breast development yet. So it becomes part of just a normal word that a doctor or somebody that they respect is using, so it's not anything bad. But to use the slang versions, I'm totally against that.
Okay, that's
and
an interesting approach.
I encourage parents, once I open the door with the word, I kind of encourage them after when they leave, I say, so now I've said it, so now you can say it.
Which really does open the door as well to, if there is something wrong, then they don't feel ashamed of coming to the doctor, coming to you, and or coming to you as a therapist, Adam, and talking about it and talking about these things and naming them. So I think that is really important. We are having a whole big discussion, 2-hour special right now on adolescence with Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant pediatrician based at MediClinic, Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center. Adam Griffin is here, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rocks. Cindy Vanderkreen Friens, development coach at Valiant Clinic, is also here. We do have a question that has come in earlier. We'll address that next.
Dubai Today.
Some great questions and comments coming through. We have one here that came in a little bit earlier asking, how do I deal with talking with my teenager when she doesn't want to speak? She doesn't tell me if anything is bothering her. She doesn't tell me why she's so upset. If she keeps secrets, should I be forceful or let her have her secrets? How do we address that one? Adam, do you want to start?
Yeah, just to come a little bit to sort of normalize it slightly, that what she's experiencing is not a new problem. My goodness, there's moms and dads all over the world through time immemorial have gone through the same thing, and it's perfectly natural. In fact, it's almost part and parcel of teenage years to try and distance themselves from the parent and try and get that level of independence. And it's a bitter pill to swallow, because a lot of the times this is the first time in the child's life the parent has to take a back seat. And then what you may, it's very intuitive to say, no, I care so much, and to be almost smothering a little bit, but what you're going to do is push the child a little bit further and further away. And so what you can do is, that peer group is super important. So provided the child has a good network of friends and feels supported, and there is someone she can talk to and get good advice, then I wouldn't be overly concerned. And what she can do 100% is make herself available. So ensure the child knows that if she wants to talk, then the mom is there and is available. And mom can do a little bit of therapeutic use of self and share slightly as well and establish that dialogue. If they don't have that sort of relationship going forward, it's very difficult to jump in at this point. But you can start with these baby steps and establish that little bit of a bond and hopefully move forward in that way.
Mm. Dr. Shola.
And something else I'd want to add to that as well is, you have to find your moments as well. You can't force a teenager to talk to you, but you know you want to share and you want to help. So you have to watch for that. It might be the most inconvenient for you, but you have to take that moment when it comes. And it might need to be in a roundabout way, talking about their friend or somebody else, or can you imagine this person told me? Have you experienced that? So for me, a conversation opener is, you know, do you have friends? Do your friends get in trouble? Or what's going on with XYZ? And then it makes them more comfortable to talk about themselves. And another important thing, yes, peer pressure is huge at that age, and mom and dad don't know what they say. So what we did when our kids were growing up, one still 17, is try and be involved in the lives of their friends as well. As in, they need to go somewhere, then we offer to drop them. It's not convenient, but all those backdoor conversation, you learn so much from
it. And that as well, but part of what I would say, be involved, but not in a big brother way, but in a genuinely interested way. Care about what your child cares about. You're not spying on them. You're not there to catch them doing bad things. It's more that you're taking part. You're an active member of their life experience.
Cindy.
Yeah, on top of that, I like what Dr. Shola and Adama are saying, being curious and finding the time. But it's also about trusting the child to find the moment itself. What helped me tremendously, because my daughter also became suddenly less talkative than before, was to use the moment when she was little, to bring her to bed, to use that time actually to just sit with her and be quiet. Mm. And to actually learn to be patient for her to come at the time that she wanted.
I think you've hit quite a point there, to say to be patient and to just really take the time and not, because I know my oldest is 11 and she's going through everything right now. And I know that I used to get really, like, you know, worked up if she didn't want to talk. If I picked her up from school and she kind of sat in the back of the car with her headphones on and I'm like, so how was school today? Fine. And that's all you'd get. And it's like, so what happened with this? And she's like, I don't want to talk. I'm tired. And I used to take it personally. I used to think, why isn't she talking to me? What's going on? You know, is there something going on for her? But actually, she just doesn't want to talk. She's tired.
Yeah, and parents, a lot of them can think, oh, I'm here for you. I'm totally non-judgmental. No, you're not. You're a little bit judgmental. So, and that's how the child can see that you've been the authoritarian figure for a long time. So you may think, no, I'm cool. I'm one of the cool parents. I'm the exception, by the way, because I'm totally going to be one of the cool parents, but every
good
parent thinks that.
That.
And I know I'm setting myself for a massive fall. I know that's hilarious to even consider that, but that's what you genuinely think. I'm not going to make the mistakes my parents do. No, it's not what you're saying or where you're coming from. It's where your child is coming from.
Yeah.
This is Dubai Today.
Welcome back to the second hour of our two-hour special today on adolescent development as children start to make the awkward transitions into adulthood. We've probably forgotten what it's like as parents and how difficult it can be. We have a full panel in the studio to discuss all of the different aspects, whether it's physical, whether it's mental, emotional, developmental, whatever it is. We've got Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant pediatrician based at Mediclinic Dubai Mall and Arabian Ranches. Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center. Adam Griffin, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rock Support Center, and Cindy Vandercreen Friends, development coach at Valiant Clinic. Now, really, puberty has to be one of the most unfortunate words in the English language because it really sums up the awkwardness of that stage of development. So many questions for somebody who's going through it. What will my friends think of me? What is going on with my body? What should I tell my parents? How will my life turn out and how will it change? For the parents, it's going to be what happened to the child my adolescent used to be. How much of the truth should I expect to be told? What will my teenager's next misadventure be? Why is my adolescent acting this way? How am I supposed to respond? Many, many questions, and we're getting into those now with our panel. An interesting point to pick up from in the last hour that we were discussing was all about talking about those physical changes, being very comfortable with them and being able to name body parts that you've got, that every single person has and that we are born with. Dr. Kenneth, it's very important. We were talking about this off the air that it's important to name those parts, even if you don't use proper names. You are of the opinion that you should be using proper names. Dr. Shola, you're of the opinion that there are times when you might need to name them something else. But whatever it is, name it and claim it. Because it's important for things like self-examination, for a young person to be able to look at their bodies and make sure that it's all normal, it's all okay, and if there is something wrong, that they can come to you as a doctor and tell you what's going on. Dr. Kenneth.
Yeah, so I can tell you a couple of stories. In my 30-year career, I've had three boys that came in for a routine physical, and, you know, we got to the point where we, you know, when they come in, if they're teenagers, they're going to get full examination, including the genitals. And I found in three boys a hernia that is the size of a orange. And I asked every one of them, I said, how long has this been there? And 6 months to a year is about the average duration. And I said, why didn't you bring this up to your parent or come in sooner? And they just looked and said, I didn't know. It was abnormal. I didn't know who to tell. I just was embarrassed by it. And, you know, that's a consequence of this business of, you know, not talking about things from an early age. Now, true, nothing bad happened to them. The hernias were fixed. But this kid walked around, these three children walked around for 6 months with hernias that needed to be fixed. And it was disheartening for me to think that, you know, because of the taboos on speaking, that, you know, there actually was some harm.
You know what's interesting? Because we're talking about these changes that happen to our bodies, and for girls there are periods. For things like polycystic ovarian syndrome, which can happen to you when you're going through your periods, your teenage years, if you're not used to talking about your periods, which we talked about in the last hour, you can't go up to the doctor and go, this is not normal, I'm experiencing this or that. And to have that treated, it is so, so important.
Absolutely. And apart from picking up or something that's already there, like a disorder that's there, it's also important for screening. So, for example, if you're familiar with your body and you know what to expect and you can examine yourself, boys in particular, we encourage them to examine their testicles because, again, testicular cancer is an issue. And it does happen sometimes in adolescents. If you know what to look for, then you feel comfortable to talk to someone that this is not right. Same thing, we encourage girls to examine their breasts. So again, you get used to that. So you know what the normal feels like and you feel comfortable talking to someone about it. But if you don't know what normal is, nobody's discussed it with you, then you might assume that it's fine. Or you go to the experts, your friends, who have no clue, but they just tell, yeah, it should be okay. And you're sitting on a problem that could easily have been fixed.
Or worse still, you might Google it and think, oh my gosh,
I'm dying.
Something's wrong with me. Or, you know, the way that you are developing isn't correct. And maybe it's just there are lots of different types of normal. How important is it to Adam to think about, you know, the fact that there are lots of different types of normal? I know earlier Dr. Kenneth shared the story about wanting to grow taller, but he wasn't as tall as he was hoping. You had the opposite experience.
Yeah, precisely so. I was, but same height, I was still 6'2", but it was about half the weight I am now. So I'm about a flat 200 pounds now. I was maybe 120, soaking wet and full of bananas. I was as heavy as I'd ever be. So I looked like I'd blow away in a breeze, and I would do anything to not be that way. That's kind of the story of so many people's teenage years, I think, is there's such a pressure on conformity. The last thing you want to do is stand out, which is odd because then when you move to college and you later in life, you're doing everything to stand out and be an individual. But in high school, it's all about conforming, and that's such a pressure for a lot of the kids that I see. They may have an established disability or they may have a diagnosis coming into me. They do not want anyone to know about that because it's one thing that's going to single them out from their peers. For example, I have some kids would have sensory processing disorder, and there's recommendations you give them for giving like chewy necklaces or chewy pencil toppers. I cannot ask one of my teenage boys to take a chewable necklace into the classroom with them. He will burst into flames from embarrassment. He will never want to do that.
Of course.
Yeah, so it's very, very natural, and to kind of understand that in to explain to kids as well that this idea of normal, it's very, very broad church. There's lots of ages and stages. There's different, even the growth and maturity and puberty, it's not a uniform scale. You'll have your legs and arms getting longer at different rates. Your beard will come in all weird and odd and awkward. But that's part of it. The awkwardness and the kind of disjointed nature of it is part and parcel for it, and it is just a stage in time.
But you've also got, Cindy, now they've got social media. You know, just a generation ago, we didn't have so much of that pressure, if at all. You went to school, the awkwardness ended there, and then you went home and it was fine. But now it's like 24/7. They are looking at images online. They are looking at images of their friends, which may have been, you know, fiddled with a bit.
Just a bit.
And they're comparing themselves a lot more to what's going on, the latest celebrity, what they're doing or what their friends are doing. I mean, what kind of an impact does that have on young people going through adolescence?
That's a great question. The impact is huge. I've read a study that said that the amount of information a teenager gets on a day was what we would get in a period of 3 to 4 months. So the amount of messages of this is how I should look like,
they're just bombarded with
them. Overwhelming.
Yeah, and not only just what to look like, is they're comparing their face on a Monday morning just got out of bed to someone else's greatest hits that are cherry-picked from their whole life and made as beautiful as they can make them. But the other aspect as well about social media is when I think of all my silly, childish misdeeds as a teenager, if I was on social media now, they're going to follow me for a long time. So you can do things and like your pictures are going to be around for a long time. So there's an awareness of that as well.
True.
And it's quite important as well to teach your children how to use social media appropriately, because it is a big problem now with the advent of bullying and your information being out there in, you know, in circulation. And also for them to be aware of the laws of the land, because there are strict laws and rules guiding the use of social media in the UAE that could get you into trouble if you don't use it appropriately. So if they're aware of that, then that will go a long way to support them.
But it's also having having opening up that dialogue with them and to kind of say, sometimes they don't really believe you, that, you know, this is not real, this is not what people are really like. It can be a really difficult thing for them to take on board, because everybody's on social media. It's not like they can get off. So it's kind of like, how do they best internalize it and understand it and be part of it without it having to affect them mentally in such a way that is going to really bring them down?
Yeah, this period is also being characterized by developing critical thinking skills. So the key to actually work as parents and other adults working with children and teenagers is to actually use that. So to ask questions like, if everybody would feel this way, what would the world look like? If we would behave all like that, what would be truthful about that? Using values that they have, that you know they have, strengths that they have, to take that into a conversation and having an open question about it.
Mm.
But without an agenda, without your agenda, to really be, like Adam said, really, really curious.
Mm. And it's not, like we mentioned before, the importance of these peer relationships, that they're hardwired to really seek this acceptance from peers. And there's an evolutionary press to do that, because as you evolved, you need to distance yourself from family and kind of connect with an out-group. So you have this kind of mixing of the genetics and makes the population healthier. But for it almost becomes an extreme now with social media, because what kids will do for the likes or to put on the gram just to get more hits is extraordinarily. And you pair that with a brain that's going through a period where it's seeking more intense sensory experiences and has dialed down the kind of impulse control center, so they're more impulsive and seeking more intense reactions too. So it's kind of a bit, sorry parents, it is kind of a bit of a perfect storm. So you need to be prepared, batten down the hatches emotionally to weather that through.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about how to batten down the hatches and get ready for that. We are discussing adolescence, that difficult time in life that everybody goes through. How do you deal with it if you're going through it? How do you deal with it as a parent of kids who are moving from childhood into adulthood? We've got with us Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant pediatrician based at MediClinic Dubai Mall and Arabian Ranches, Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center, Adam Griffin, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rocks Support Center, and Cindy Vandercreen, development coach at Valiant Clinic. And lots of great texts coming in as well. There is one saying, very valuable and informative session. I have a 10-year-old who has just started developing her breasts, and now I have an idea of how to bring up the discussion with her, since my mum never had it with me as a girl. Keep up the good work. And that's exactly what we're doing today, opening up the discussion, making sure that we are at least providing some of the tools to be able to do that as parents. And if you head to our Dubai Today webpage, on there our producer Aisha is posting up more details and more resources and more videos that will help you to get through them. And more questions are coming in. How do you help them mature? We will get to that one next. It's Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Dubai Today.
Getting through that time of adolescence, puberty, and the awkwardness and the difficulties. Oh my goodness, it's all coming back to us. But if you have a child who's going through it now, then we've got a full panel of experts here to help with that. We've also got a caller on the line who wants to share her experience. Hello. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Good afternoon. How are you today?
Great to have you on. Please do share with us your experience.
Well, I have a son that's an adolescent at the moment. Hopefully he's not listening to me right now, because he wouldn't want me to be discussing him in any way. That's part of it as well, I think. But I've been listening intently, and I think what your doctors and experts are saying is a great thing, that you should have the conversation with your children. And probably younger is better than older. The way I did it was I initiated a conversation over a book. There's a lot of good books. Maybe your experts can, you know, shed a light on that. And we started with a book about, you know, how your body is going to change and emotionally how things will be and so on. Of course, my son did not want to go there. He said, just give me the book and I'll read it myself type thing. But I think it's very, very important for parents that you have a conversation and that the child feels they're able to come to you if they need to. Because of, you know, everything that's going around, the social media, the friends, the peer pressure, they need that outlet to be able to talk to their parents if needed.
What are the biggest issues, do you think, with your child that they go through? Has it been friends? Has it been physical changes? What is it, do you think, is kind of having the biggest impact?
I don't think friends. He's lucky that way. He has a good bunch of friends that are quite supportive. Maybe it's a boy thing as well. I feel girls have more issues. But I think it's just the peer pressure to just what you see out there in the world. Because everybody puts their best foot forward on social media. So everybody thinks that everybody else's life is so much better than theirs.
Or I mean, we do their it best,
as adults.
Yeah, it could be their best filter forward, really, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And so I think that's the one issue where they see that maybe everybody's life is so much better than theirs. And that's a conversation to be had at home, I think, nearly every single week. That it's not. It's just, you know, it's just an image of what it, you know, what people's life is for that, you know, 30 seconds that they took a picture or put on a video, or it's not really their real life.
It just does feel a bit relentless, doesn't it? Did your parents, were they able to talk to you? You sound very relaxed about it, very good about it. There are lots of parents out there who are very nervous. What would be your advice to them on how to approach it?
Well, to be fair, my mom was a very forward thinker for her age and time back then, you know. I'm in my 40s now. She was very open to discussions. We cringed sometimes because we didn't really want to have that conversation with our mother. But I always think that it's biological. It's natural. Their body will change. Their emotion, you know, I mean, don't make it such a big deal. I think parents are scared to open the subject because they're taboo maybe in this part of the world, or, you know, it's not the done thing. It's not. It's normal. And if you normalize it, I think that child probably sees it that way as well, and is more willing to be open with it, you know?
Thank you so much for sharing your experience. It's great. And hopefully we'll inspire other parents to do the same thing. So it's what you were saying earlier, that it does need to be normalized. It does need to be named. Yeah, Dr.
Yeah,
Kenneth.
Yeah, so this woman hit a chord, and it basically goes back to, and she said, maybe it's easier to do earlier than later, and 100%. If you start from age 3, like I said, naming the body parts appropriately, not giggling if you can, and just make it like, this is the human body, this is what happens, it won't be a problem to talk for a 10-year-old. But if you start at 10, 12, 14, it's the next child that you'll be able to do it with, not that child.
Mm. Adam?
Yeah, absolutely. I like that line about it's the next child, you're learning from your mistakes, but that first one slipped through the cracks a little bit. But from what the caller said, fantastic she called in. That was lovely to see her insight. And the idea, I think a lot of parents do that, where we talked about, you can give them a book or give them materials and allow them to access it at their own speed. Some of the kids I work with, I know if I give them a book about this, they'll be like, okay, whatever. And they'll take it just to shut the parent up, but they're not engaging with it. I would say to parents, embrace the new technology. There's wonderful YouTube channels that are really good. There's one called Watch Wellcast that has one about all about puberty, but it has all about puberty in boys and all about puberty in girls. Two separate videos. They have about 7 million views each, and I know lots of parents really love this because it's specifically tailored to be accessible and to be kind of fun and enjoyable for kids that age. It's something parent does not have to be sitting on their shoulder. In fact, please don't sit in your child's shoulder while they're watching this. Let them kind of engage with it in their own and come and say if you do have any questions, you can talk about it afterwards. Watch it yourself, absolutely, and become familiar with it. But finding something that's accessible and palatable to them where they are emotionally right now.
And we've got links to some of the videos that you've recommended, Adam, on our Dubai Today page, on the blog today, on DubaiEye1038.com. So do head there. And some of those videos that Adam is recommending are there. You can watch them. You can have a look at those. We do have other questions about maturity, about behavior and maturity, which are really important and really interesting because, of course, girls apparently mature faster than boys. We knew that all along, didn't we? But we'll get to the bottom of that, why that is important next. This is Eye on Health on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is Dubai Today.
Continuing our discussion today, all about adolescence and all about those changes that young people go through as they move from childhood into adulthood. So many things to talk about, which is why we've made it into a two-hour special. And included on the panel today are Adam Griffin, Head of Occupational Therapy at Autism Rocks Support Centre, Cindy Vanderkreen Freens, Development Coach at Valiant Clinic, Dr. Shola Fanaran, Paediatrician at the Children's Medical Centre, and Dr. Kenneth Dugan, Consultant Paediatrician based at MediClinic Dubai Mall and Arabian Ranches. Now, a lot of questions, Adam, coming in about behavior, about maturity. Let's read through some of these and we can go through these. How do you help them mature and understand things? A lot of times they seem to be behaving like people on TV, which seems immature to us. She says, I'm his sister, much older than him. Dad's passed away and mum is very passive. And she's asking about her brother who is displaying, he's 21, but is showing the behavior of a teenager. So what should we be expecting in terms of behavior and maturity between boys and girls?
Yeah, there is a big gender difference there. This has almost been the clarion call of teenage girls for decades is, oh my God, he is so immature. And you'll hear this, I guarantee you go into any school in Dubai, you'll hear that again and again.
Oh, it all over the world.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I remember 12 and 13-year-old boys, I think they're the worst at that age. Uh-huh. I really just wanted to get rid of them all when we were in year 7 and year 8. It was just a nightmare.
Oh my goodness me. You should see the look in her eyes right now. I think that pain is still too soon. Yeah, but there is a general difference there. And it's not that, oh, he's so mature, he's behaving such an immature way. There's actually physiological differences in their brain. So if you get a little kind of nerdy and talk about the neurology for a minute, they talked about a huge, very busy time in brain development between 0 and 5. Little toddlers' brains are like a cognitive fireworks show. It's all going on every second of every day. And they thought this was a very important area in brain development. But now they recently found out there's really great research into the brain development of adolescent years. And there happens an awful lot of these connections that are so dense and so hardwired, there's a great deal of pruning that goes on. So the brain's being kind of organized and sorted out, and they're putting things in place to stand you in good stead for later life. And girls tend to go through this process an awful lot quicker than boys. There's really cool research from from Newcastle University that found for things like the development of the frontal lobes for impulse control, emotional regulation, aggression management, being able to manage yourself and be organized. And this happens almost hugely different between boys and girls. It's not a small difference. For some girls get there, start around 14, 15, and kind of have their stuff together by the time they get to 17. For boys, it starts off a little later, and it takes a long time. For these frontal lobes, they're not fully developed in boys until 25 to 27.
I mean, this really speaks to the question that she posed, the sister of this young man posed, what if a 21-year-old is showing teenage behavior, and this is exactly what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely so. And we talked a little bit about off air as well. It's being socially kind of supported a little bit more. So boys will be boys, which is not, it's, boys are not excused from their actions. If they do things, they're responsible for it. They are if you imagine they're neurologically hardwired behave in this way, but you have an awareness of that as well, so you can account for it.
Mm. Cindy, you wanted to make a comment on this.
Mm. Yeah, 27 is really the age. So
even 27
takes a little while. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say there's big outliers in that too. So there's girls that have a big, again, difference when they start and finish, and then boys as well. But generally speaking, that's the difference in age. And you do have this, again, we talked about the perfect storm of lower impulse control, a greater need for intense sensation, and greater this risk-taking behavior. So it all combines together and becomes this exponential fireworks show.
So, yeah,
and
Dr.
I guess
Shola.
Part of being able to handle that appropriately is to manage your expectations. Because if we know this is a physiological thing happening on in the brains of young boys and men, then the expectations you have will be managed, and you will have the scaffolding or put them in a position where it's well contained. Rather than, oh, you're now 18, you should know better. No, they don't know better. So rather than overloading them with what you want them to do, you help them break it down so they can then learn the process appropriately.
Yeah, true. And they're kind of, a lot of the times for the young boys I work with in particular, it's a little bit of a biased sample, but I work with kids with autism an awful lot, but kids with emotional and behavioral difficulties as well. And they find themselves in these problematic situations. They got in trouble at school, or they're having behavioral difficulties. And a lot of the times they're just told to behave or just kind of do better than they're doing, but they're not given the tools to do that. One of the things I love about being an occupational therapist, we're very focused on giving the practical everyday solutions to real world problems. So when I work with this kid, I'll tell him his brain is trying to trip him up at every turn and is getting him in trouble, but this is how you fight back against it. You're not just going to be a passive recipient as your brain knocks you hither and yon. Instead, you're going to have the tools to say, no, I'm in control, I'm responsible for me, and be able to actually act on that.
And for a parent, I mean, when you see this kind of thing happening, what's the best course of action, you know, to do? What do you do as a parent when your boy is going through this?
Well, I think the first thing is empathy. To express, I know you go through this, what's that like? And sometimes they don't want to answer to that, so you can say, you know, I can imagine this must be frustrating for you, right? Another thing I think is very important is to accept the teenager, not the behavior. Sometimes you need to put some boundaries, but the key to those boundaries is that you also discuss them beforehand, that there is some agreement about that. I call that designing the alliance together as a family. Yeah.
And for example, as a developmental pediatrician, I tend to see a lot of these kids when they get into trouble. And it might just be a case of this child has, or this adolescent has, undiagnosed ADHD. So putting the mixed ADHD with normal increase in, you know, poor impulse control you get in teenage years, you have a recipe for disaster.
How do you know, though? How can you pick that as a parent? Or should, if you have concerns, is it just a matter of bringing that child to a doctor, to you?
Absolutely. And you have to seek somebody who understands development in children, not just your average general pediatrician that might just reassure you and tell you, oh, boys will be boys, which is really not acceptable. Because if a child has ADHD, it's a chemical imbalance in the brain, and you can do something about it to support the child.
Yeah, and I would say do speak to someone as well. And people like myself and Shola and the rest of the panel, we are quite accessible. You will find us. And what parents do a lot of the time is speak to someone who already will give them what they want to hear, or they'll Google something to agree with what they want to kind of agree with. And that's very, very natural. But if you are concerned and you think there are maybe issues like that with ADHD, or even we work with lots of kids with ASD, with autism, but they get through, they muddle through from year to year okay, but autism is difficulty primarily of socialization and communication. At no time in your life is that more important than your teenage years. Mm. And these kids, just the social skills that a lot of kids just pick up, they really struggle with. And that's a good word, is struggle. And you can almost give them the little, almost like the cheat book. These are the rules for social engagements, and they learn them like rules, but it makes their life an awful lot easier.
Mm.
And I do encourage parents, because some parents are a bit reserved, or they're not keen on what they call a label. But I tell them it's not labeling, it's identifying what the difficulty is, because then it reassures the young person as well. I'm not odd, I'm not naughty, I'm not abnormal. I have this difficulty and I need to learn how to deal with it.
Which comes back to that stigma as well of, you know, mental health, of what's going on, you know, being scared of labels is really part of that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that they're right, there's being an awareness of that, but that's changed an awful lot and is in the process of changing hugely. That you have very public, like TV shows, like Atypical, or characters like Sheldon in The Big Bang Theory, who have like a developmental disability, and people can see them and they're portrayed in a positive light. And if you do have that, we'll call the label if your diagnosis or anything, it does connect you with a peer group. And this is one thing a lot of my guys struggle with, is they have no like social connectedness. They feel like the outsider the whole time. And once they have a little bit of an understanding, these are people, these are my folks, these are my people, then they take ownership of that. And instead of a label, it becomes like an armor they can use to, then the slings and arrows just bounce off them at that point.
Mm. We got one texting going, girls can be so moody in their teens. Yes, they can. We're going to be talking a bit more about girls and moods and weight gain. Should you be concerned about it? Things like sleep, nutrition, what are the things that we need to be looking out for our adolescents? It's Eye on Health on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa, on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Dubai Today.
It's the last few moments with our special panel. It's a show, a two-hour special on adolescence today, and lots of messages coming in. We're talking mental development, emotional development, how it's different between boys and girls. A text that came in, girls can be so moody in their teens. They absolutely can. But something that we left off just before we went to the break, talking about how emotional and mental development can be used as an excuse for behavior, and how to make sure that we can tell the difference between behavior that needs consultation, further consultation, and behavior that is just normal at that age. And you had a really great comment, Dr. Kenneth, about this in relation to what Dr. Shola was saying about the fact that there are mm-hmm. other conditions that can be at play here and how parents react to that.
Yeah, so you know, most general pediatricians, we focus on the physical. There's a subspecialty of pediatrics called developmental pediatricians, who are more into the mind aspect of development. And you know, the problem is your first line is you're gonna talk to your pediatrician. You're gonna say he's doing this, he's doing that, and unfortunately, the majority of the time, you're gonna be told, it's normal, it's a boy thing, boys will be boys, girls don't talk, they're moody. But if you feel that your child is on the other side of the bell curve, it's worth your while to invest the time and probably even resources and money to see a developmental pediatrician, because it's not covered by most insurances. But you have to, you know, pick your priorities and maybe, you know, pay out of pocket, maybe just for one or two visits, just to talk to a developmental pediatrician. Hey, is this in the normal range, or is this outside of normal?
And also, I mean, you know, when young people are going through that phase of adolescence, and it becomes really difficult as well, just even around their friends and, you know, the problems that can arise there. I mean, is it advisable to say to them, maybe you should talk to a psychologist about it, maybe you should see a therapist about it and go through those issues?
As a developmental pediatrician, unfortunately, I tend to see when it is a big problem. And yes, when it becomes a big problem, the child's been suspended or close to being expelled from school and it becomes crisis, we deal with it. But then it is not as easy as if you had started earlier on when you started seeing signs of difficulties. And sometimes it is not a diagnosis. It's typical behavior, but on the extreme side of it. But irrespective of what it is, it needs to be managed. You need to have that talk, and you need to have the talk with someone who is able to have a more holistic look at it and look at every single aspect of the child and not just focus on that behavior.
Cindy.
Yeah, I want to build on that. It's really important to look for support, for professional support, but it's also important to trust your intuition.
Just quickly before we do wrap up, and just in terms of things like gaining weight, this is certainly part of what happens to kids' bodies, but is there a point where parents should be concerned, particularly if we're talking about girls? That's quite a focus. You know, some parents are very concerned about hormones in, say, chicken or other foods. We had a question that came in earlier about this. Is this something that can bring on the onset of puberty earlier, of adolescence earlier? When do you worry about this kind of thing?
Okay. Weight gain is normal in adolescence, but ideally you should have been tracking your child's growth, because you don't want a sudden increase in weight. If they start putting on weight in adolescence, they are more likely to keep it on into adulthood. And then you start having complications of overweight or obesity that we know is all associated. But as a pediatrician, I do not advocate weight loss in children. It's more weight maintenance. Correct. And we work more on healthy eating and exercise to find a balance. And it's a whole family approach. So, for example, if I have a child that the mom comes to me and the child's concerned about their weight as well, and I know dad or somebody else in the family has Coke at home regularly, you can't just focus on the child. It has to be a whole family approach and more a lifestyle change rather than this child has to lose weight.
Unfortunately, we are out of time, but 2 hours even was not long enough. Dr. Kenneth Dugan, consultant pediatrician based at MediClinic, Dubai Mall and Arabian Ranches, thank you so much.
Welcome.
For bringing your expertise to the table. Dr. Shola Fanaran, pediatrician at the Children's Medical Center, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cindy Vandekreen Friens, development coach at Valiant Clinic, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And last but not least, Adam Griffin, head of occupational therapy at Autism Rocks Support Center. Brilliant to have you in, as always.
Always a pleasure.
But if you want to get in touch with any of our guests, the details will be on our site on the Dubai Today page on Dubai Eye 103.8. The podcast will be up as well if you've missed part of the discussion, as well as resources that you can go to help your kids out. That's it for us on Dubai Today with me, Sally Musa.
This is Dubai Today.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.